Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to another Anime NYC 2019 podcast special. I am your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in. Now, before I begin, since I wasn't able to do this during the Crunchyroll interview, I wanted to start the show off by thanking the staff and crew at Anime NYC for a fantastic year. This was the first time I've ever gone to Anime NYC and was truly blown away by everyone and everything that was going on. You've got yourself a repeat visitor, that's for sure. But there are three people that I especially want to give a big batch of love to for all of their hard work behind the scenes. And that was the three PR people that worked tirelessly to make sure all of these interviews happened without a hitch. Those three folks are Shelby Jolly, Kenya Najera, and Anthony Heselius. So a big tip of the hat to that trio. I hope Anime NYC recognizes their hard work. On that note, on to the first interview, or rather the second if you count the Adam Sheehan Crunchyroll one. Today, you are going to hear a great roundtable discussion with voice actor Clifford Chapin, best known as Bakugo in My Hero Academia, Connie in Attack on Titan, Keiki in Hensuki, and Toya in Cardcaptor Sakura, Clear Card. B3 was joined by Japanator, Dub Talk, and Gadget Vlogs for this discussion. So let's all hail Lord Explosion Murder as we fire up this Anime NYC interview podcast special with Clifford Chapin. I know what I have to do now. It's my heart.
Oh, it's like, how do we do this without someone being the moderator?
I can start the questions.
Okay, that works.
So, you play characters such as Kaba from Dragon Ball Super, mm-hmm. Koni from Attack on Titan, mm-hmm. and Bakugo from My Hero Academia. Mm-hmm. What is your process to play characters with vastly different personalities?
Every character is just their own person, and so I just try to go into each role and be as honest to that person. Trying to understand who they are and where they come from is always key to understanding any character and portraying them accurately. But a lot of it comes down to understanding the direction that you're receiving, receiving a lot of information from the director, letting them lead you and understand who this person is and taking the knowledge that they're giving you and interpreting those scenes. Especially in dubbing anime, we preview the Japanese version first, and so we have essentially a stencil of what the character is going through set forth, and so we just try to interpret that again into what sounds normal or natural for an English audience.
Excellent. Thank you. Second question. Okay, so you have voiced Bakugo for over 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And being a loud and energetic character, how has that been for you?
Exhausting. it's definitely taken a toll on my voice. I find now my laugh is a lot wheezier. My natural laugh is a lot wheezier because of how much I've hurt my voice over the years of voicing him. But it's been almost revolutionary. Bakugo is a huge change in my career, game changer in my career.
Because right now you're on Netflix, right, doing Evangelion.
Yes, right? Yes.
And the one who replaces my character, Asuka, and everything, right, when she powers down.
Yes. But it was just such a change because, you know, where once Attack on Titan was probably my biggest role and people would come up to me for that all the time and ask questions about that, now people come up to me and they go, oh, you're in Attack on Titan? And it's like, yeah, I that was like my big thing a few years ago. But it's just unbelievable. And now I have a whole bunch of... I have so many interactions with fans who are touched by My Hero Academia and just I've had so many incredible experiences and interactions that were brought about because of Bakugo. And whether people understand and appreciate Bakugo or whether people understand and don't appreciate Bakugo are two different things, but everybody always has.
What about Sakura Clear? How's that going?
It was a lot of fun. I hope there's more eventually.
The cliffhanger. Where's the rest of the episode?
Yeah, I would love for there to be more, but that was crazy too because that was a legacy sort of character and role to step into that.
Brother.
Yeah, and you know there have been so many interpretations of Toya and different actors who have played him and.
So just that you're working off of Justin Briner again.
Yeah. Me and Briner in very different roles.
Yuki
role,
is like, yeah, that was one of my favorites.
Portrayals.
Side Sakura. And Kira, so.
Yeah.
Hero, yeah.
So.
So, Connie is a character actually admired greatly on Attack on Titan because he's kind of like the most optimistic of all the people on that show.
I almost find he's the most human.
He's the most human. So how do you pull off that positivity throughout a show where you're seeing all these other characters either getting killed or eaten?
I think a lot of that came from the first season because in the first season, when the auditions were held for that, I had only been working with Funimation for about 10 months. And so I was positive that I was not going to get cast in it because I was not a big name or anything like that. And everybody was talking about Attack on Titan. And so when we started working on that show and I got cast as Connie, initially when I first was called in to work on the show at all, they didn't tell me who I was playing. So I thought I was just going to be somebody who died. And that's what I expected. And then
I ever dies in my Attack on Titan.
And then when I got actually cast and was told like, oh, you're playing Connie, I was never confident I wasn't gonna get fired. Like I was so new that I was ready at any moment to be let go from the project. Like you know what, this really isn't working out. We're gonna use like a soul son, you know, or like somebody who was very popular and prominent at the time, and take over the role. And so I just never really felt confident that I was going to get to stay that way. So any time that I was in for the show, I was just kind of like, oh, I'm still here.
So and you're still here.
I'm still doing it. Yeah. I'm still Connie. So, yeah.
Actually, there's been a lot of questions, and you are very prolific as an actor, but you are also a voice director for anime and English dubs.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I might ask a quick question, what are some of the biggest challenges you faced as a director as opposed to being an actor?
I think one of the biggest challenges for me as a director was kind of learning to let go a little bit. Anime dubs are so director-centric. I personally feel like the quality of an English dub lives or dies by the director and how much the director cares to actually put in the effort to make sure that the reads are all telling the story and being informed and giving information. And when I first started directing with Funimation, there was a very specific standard to how things were done, and we look at flaps this way, and we worry about these things, and there were all these like really rigid rules regarding all these little minute details, And I kind of realized at a certain point that I was like, you know, if I really fixate on these things to the point of beating them to death, I feel like we're inhibiting the performances. And I feel like the performances are the things that fans really connect with. And so I started, like, easing off a little bit on some of the minute perfection of, like, well, this has to hit every flap exactly right, to be more in the line of, like, well, if this lands within a reasonable limit, nobody's going to notice if it's a little bit off. But if the performance is killer, fans are going to be like, that was a great performance. They're not going to be paying attention. Like, well, that last flap flapped three times, but that was a two-syllable word, you know? And
you're talking like the old school.
Right. And so I kind of let go a little bit because I thought about the dubs that were considered very good from when I was a kid. And if you watch those now, it's like, man, the flaps are all over the place. Like,
oh, yeah.
they don't look anywhere close to what we do now. So I kind of realized, like, if we back off a little bit but still keep it tighter than it was in the old days and just worry really more about giving solid, strong, very well-informed performances, then we're going to deliver the best of every world.
Yeah.
And, nice.
And so that was my biggest hurdle I kind of overcame about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago.
How much is ad-libbing done?
Pretty much never.
No,
we don't have the room for that sort of thing. And you wouldn't want it to be, especially because you know, we want the dubs to be faithful and accurate to the original version. The purpose of an English dub is to make a show accessible to another audience, but still deliver the same experience that the original provided. You know, so.
As a director, can I get an example of some other anime that was Please Teacher? If you go for the English sub versus the Japanese, and I put the subtitles on, I can see where English sub sometimes has to be very PC'd around certain things,
yeah,
especially
absolutely.
That scene in the hotel. If you know what I'm talking about,
I haven't seen the series, but
where they would drink, they were underage drinking,
okay,
and everything.
Yep.
So on the Japanese one, they tell that they're drinking and something happens, whereas the other one, oh, I'm just so sleepy, not realizing they're drunk.
Right.
And everything. So does that happen a lot with all the ones you do, direct and everything?
It can. Because there are definitely differences in just in culture between Japan and America and you know, other English-speaking territories that there are things that are considered politically correct or incorrect and whatnot that, you know, we sometimes have to worry about. Maybe this is going to come across as offensive, but at the same time, I feel like we're moving a little bit away from that. Not to make things maybe like less offensive, but to recognize that like this is the story that it's trying to tell, and we're trying to be faithful and accurate to it. It's an odd dance, and I don't have an answer for it.
Car captain support the original ones. They couldn't show up a grandfather because no one understood why the father let her alone with the old man. That's why it was never aired on certain TV channels or anything. And so you got the DVDs and you saw her in the original. It is her grandfather. It's like an underline. And everything, because you don't know the whole story background until you get into the series.
Gotcha.
And then after that, you go, oh, wait, that is, and everything. So it was okay for her to be alone with an older man and everything at the age she is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So one of my favorite and surprisingly really good rom-coms to say that you had a chance to play in was in Hentsuki. Where you got to play Keiki.
Yeah.
And what I liked about the show, the character of Keiki, he's kind of like this young, non-stoner version of Seth Rogen, who's like very blunt with what's on his mind.
Oh, my God.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the challenges when it came to like the more comedic and even the more emotional aspects of playing Keiki in Hentsuki?
I literally just finished Hentsuki last week. I'm very excited.
Oh, man. I think the biggest challenge of Hentsuki was always trying to find another way to be funny. Because I always say, talking about Hentsuki now, that Hentsuki is, I could almost make a demo reel just out of Hentsuki.
Yeah.
Just because we used my entire vocal range, with like maybe the exception of like one or two voices, is somewhere in Hentsuki, where I'm just like doing these crazy dips in pitch and like come out of it. There's definitely one episode where I did what I call the Bakugo voice, and then, I started Bakugo voice and, like, ended in my normal voice in a sentence. I just, like, let it transition back, and like just all these crazy things. It was such a wild, wild ride, and but man, it was funny. We all the times that I just got to go like what, but like ah balls, like all these all these things. Oh my god!
Do you ever just say ah balls now in your regular life now?
No, no, and I've never said it as much as I have on that show.
Would you say you had a favorite female character that you interacted with, or someone you were hoping to be the Cinderella of that show?
Man, it probably maybe Mao. Maybe
good
Mao
choice.
Because Mao yes. was the most, like, I hate to say it this way, but she was the most, like, normal. Like, she was like the most vanilla of all the girls, and all the other ones frightened me.
I mean, told Kristen that.
She knows. She knows from working on it, but man, we all just had these moments of just, man, we cracked up a lot. I made Maddie Morris laugh a lot with a bunch of lines that we came up with. And yeah.
I love the style of humor on that show. That show and another show that aired like last year, Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai, mm-hmm. both of those shows had this very Judd Apatow style of comedy, where Keiki was more like a Seth Rogen, Sakuta was more like a Paul Rudd in mm-hmm. that show. So that's what really drew me into Hensuki, is because it had that sort of familiar kind of comedy.
Yeah. I can't tell you how much time we spent on, like, Urban Thesaurus, like, trying to find new words for women's underwear. Like, a lot of those things where they call it, like, the taco wrapper and stuff. That was all stuff of us, like, looking through, like, long lists of things people have said. Man, it's the only show I've ever gotten to say to a girl, like, do you think I'm just trying to blue ball you? Like, so, yeah, that was something. Hensuki was a ride.
Speaking of craziness, what about what the fans are doing now with My Hero Academia and putting you with Deku and everything, like the character, like they're trying to put them together as a couple?
Oh, you mean like shipping?
Yeah. Because I actually had at Halloween, I do a thing in my building. One of the girls is dressed as Todoroki, and mm-hmm. she said, "Who do you want to ship?" And I was like, I'm not going to go there.
Yeah.
But it seems that your two characters are always being put together.
I mean, Bakugo gets shipped to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I get asked shipping questions all the time. And to be honest with you, I don't ship any characters from any show with any other characters ever. Mm-hmm. Because I, as the actor, I have a duty to provide an accurate portrayal of those characters in the stories. And if I'm getting invested in the story, telling it a certain way, or like, well, man, I really want Bakugo to end up with that person, and then they don't end up with that person, then, like, that could affect my performance. And then
so
I'm
kind of like, it's in a way, like a bias.
Right, because then I'm biased, and I'm like, trying to read that into my performance, and that's not the story that's being told.
Playing up or playing down, depending on
And so I don't know. Shipping is a very fan-centric thing, and it's cool that fans do it, but it's not a thing that
It's called shipping, but you're in dangerous water.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, so with Kaba and Vegeta having, like, a, I guess, like a student-teacher, father-son mm-hmm. relationship, mm-hmm. What is your relationship with Chris Sabat?
it's pretty good. Sabat's actually who got me sort of into this industry. I met him several years ago now, I gave him my demo. It was so funny. I always kind of tell the story this way, but he met me and he's like, yeah, sure, okay, kid, like whatever. And then I went on my way, gave him my demo and my resume, and then I even remember saying, like, I think I told my dad about it. Like, I met this guy. He's a voice director and he owns his own studio and everything. And I gave him my demo and I'm like, but I'll be lucky if I hear anything back in a week. And 3 hours later, I had an email from Chris Sabat that was like, hey, sorry I treated you like an asshole.
Wow. Like,
and,
I think Sabat actually told me the story, but he never revealed who it was he was talking about.
And so they listened to my demo, and so that was like a Monday. By Friday, they had scheduled me for something that they were recording at his studio. And I went in and recorded that thing, and then so he spoke to me more one-on-one there, and then he passed on my information to Joel McDonald at Funimation, Joel called me in for an audition. I booked the audition, and the rest was history. I've never gotten out of Funimation since. But so Savitt is in, not in the same sort of way, because like I don't call Savitt master, but like Savitt is sort of a weird mentor type figure in my my career, which is very funny for then like Kaba and Vegeta and then like Bakugo and All Might and. Mm-hmm. And all those moments, so right. It's pretty fun.
Justin's kind of become your Sean Schimmel.
Yes!
actually, if you don't mind, have you done a lot of, like, because I know you do a lot of voice acting and stuff nowadays, have you done a lot of, like, stage work or drama and stuff prior to voice acting?
No, I never did any, I did, like, in high school, I was in, like, Romeo and Juliet, but otherwise, really, I ran tech and stuff when I was in high school. I was part of the sound team, manipulating microphone volumes and stuff for all of our high school plays and whatnot. And then, but I'd always wanted to be a film director growing up. And then when I was in college, I had this conversation with my dad. I was home for spring break or something. And I was at home because I was not cool enough to go to, like, Cancun. And he was like, you know, I always thought it was weird that you wanted to be a film director when your whole life's been about cartoons. And I was like, crap. And so I sort of adjusted my focus at the beginning, pretty close to the beginning of college, going into my second year, and to focus on like voiceover and stuff as well. But I never did any real stage to speak of or anything like that. So
question for you then, because while many voice actors and directors, their background is in acting, in theater, in radio, things like that, and your background is production, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How has a production background translated into a voice acting, directing role, and what have you been able to apply into that role from those experiences?
Well, I think it plays in a lot to it plays a lot into my directing style for anime because I am highly narrative focused.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of the people who were actors first, they worry a lot about little nuances of that aspect of it and like who are strong actors and who are this and whatnot. And there are other directors who come in that are. They were like engineers, and they will be really tight on like flaps and focus, you know, a lot of technical aspects and you know, and maybe that helps them in other ways because that helps them know like, oh, if we need to stretch this line, squish this line, it's going to be within an acceptable limit because they did that for so long. But my focus kind of, I obviously was a voice actor first, but like I studied narrative film my whole life. That comes into I always look at the bigger picture. Like, I read into a lot of things that, like, what is this one line that this character's saying mean in the greater scope? Like, just as a small aside, but, like, Darling in the Franxx is a great example because Darling in the Franxx is a show that people are always like, man, the ending came out of nowhere. And I was like, not if you paid attention because, like, there were all these characters that spoke throughout the whole show, like Papa and all those people in his group. Whenever they spoke, they were definitely leading us to the ending of the show, and so I was always weaving these details, these little nuances into those characters' performances because I knew there was going to be something at the end of the show, even though I didn't know what it was at the time,
right.
That there was going to be something at the end of the show that this was all central to. And so, I don't know, I think my production education makes me more of a bigger picture person.
Okay.
So, I guess that would be it, but yeah.
So the universe of My Hero Academia is practically as big as any Marvel or DC universe, which could possibly lead to spin-offs somewhere down the line. So my question for you is, if your character at Bakugo was ever given the opportunity to have his own spin-off series, what would you like to see it be about?
I would like it to be like, not in the same way, but like in the last few years, we saw this spin-off of Dragon Ball come out that was like that time I got reincarnated as Yamcha.
Oh my god!
Yes. So I would love for Bakugo to have like a weird comedy spin-off that was like because Bakugo's quirk is all about his sweat, right? Like it's all about his nitroglycerin like sweat. I think it would be really funny if for part of his professional hero agency thing, he had to do a bunch of promo commercials for like antiperspirant.
Like, oh my god.
If he just had to do a bunch of ads for, like, Old Spice.
Do you have Explosive Stink?
That's what I want. I want that spinoff. Like,
So just to clarify, you care less about his shipping dynamics and more about how good he is at advertising deodorant.
Yeah, totally. I mean, could there be any other character in the My Hero universe currently that's more like Terry Crews than oh like, God. Just Bogdan, the power!
See, now I'm just imagining Bakugo and Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
See? There you go. It writes itself, you guys.
There
I'm
it
here.
Is. Oh there it God. Is.
So, there's a spinoff.
I like this alternate universe thing already. Actually, quick question now that I'm thinking about it. This could be either acting or directing. Mm-hmm. I know when it comes to working the booth, people have to describe a lot of different takes and make certain emotions come out of the actor or performance. Whether as a director or an actor, has there ever been a vocal direction that has really stuck with you, or one that you have given to an actor that you thought was very memorable and interesting? You bonus points if you say for what show and what situation.
It's hard to think of any for a specific instance where I was in the booth. The one that I gave the most, like, when working on Darling in the Franxx, and I've started giving it on recent episodes of Dr. Stone, has been, break the hearts! Like, that's what I'm always, like, saying is dig in, like, to get an actor to dig into a moment. I'm like, make this as emotional as possible. Break the hearts of the audience, you know? Break the hearts is the direction I give probably the most.
Did you give that one to Kent a lot?
I gave it to Kent very recently for the Dr. Stone episodes. Tia got it a lot in Darling in the Franxx.
Gridman?
Gridman, I'm trying to think if I give it to anybody in Gridman. Gridman didn't really have those things. With Gridman, we always made this joke, Stephen Fu played Ante and Ian Sinclair played Caliber, and they start, like, sparring and, like, trying to get, you know, Caliber's always trying to get Ante to think outside of his own box, but we used to do all these things, like, they'd be sparring, and I'd be like, best friends! Like, you know, like, so it'd be like these two characters, so, and Stephen Fu would start mimicking it too, he'd be like, best friends! Like, sparring in the fog! Like, you know, like, we'd just do all these things, but that's probably the only one I can think of is break the hearts, is what I say all the time.
Thank you.
Question I like to ask voice actors, and this is a little thing called Three Character Island, and basically, if you found yourself stuck on a deserted island, which three characters that you have played in the past would you like to have around you to keep you sane until your imminent rescue, and why?
Ooh, three characters that I played that I want to be around me. Cabba can fly. So let's go with Cab, because he'll get me off the island. I don't know. After that, I think it'd be really funny to have, like, Charles Gray from Black Butler and Bakugo, just because then Cabo and I would leave, and they would be stuck on the island just fighting. And I think that'd be funny.
If you're stuck on an island, it's going to be hot. Bakugo's basically just an entire arsenal right
he's
there.
He's always explosive. He's never not sweating.
Oh. So. What do you consider your greatest accomplishment that you've personally made in the industry?
Oh my God, I can't even begin to guess. I mean, there's been so many now, so many great things that I've been very fortunate. I was a huge fan of Evangelion as a college student and teenager and stuff.
Which
and so
version?
I watched the ADV version in college, and so to get to be a part of the Netflix version was insane, and then I was a huge Dragon Ball fan as a kid, so becoming Kaba. But like when I was in college, I went to college in Long Island, so I used to come into New York to go to the Javits Center every year for New York Comic Con, and so like there's a weird. My mind's kind of bending a little bit right now that it's like, and now I'm here as a guest. Like I've been in this convention center a million times, you know, so.
It was kind of like
how
home.
How was that experience, like, from an attendee to a guest?
I don't even know. Like, this is the first thing I've done for the con. So, like,
you could just ask for a bottle of water and you don't have to pay $5.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah.
Basically.
I get my own bathroom, you know? I got to go over here to go to a bathroom. But, like, it's crazy. I can't even... There are moments I really can't even wrap my head around the experience that and how fortunate I've been. I'm just immensely, immensely grateful, and I do just feel fortunate all the time. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Did that answer your question?
We'll say yes. We'll say yes.
So, maybe this might be a final question. out of everyone that you've played, who do you relate to the most?
Oh my god. Colleen would never let me live it down, but it would probably be Bakugo. Justin Cook and Colleen Klinkerbeard, they always say that I'm just like Bakugo. At work and everything like that. Like, we got some news about a show coming up or something, or deadlines, whatever. And Justin Cook is, you know, he voices Kirishima, but he's like my boss's boss's boss, to give you a sense of the hierarchy. And he's like, hey, we got information about the deadline of this thing. And I go, when? And he goes, you know, other directors would be like, oh, when? But you, he's like, there's your Bakugo personalities. When is it? Tell me when it is, and I will hit the deadline. You know, so he's like, there are these little elements of Bakugo that are very true to me, though I would like to believe that I was never a bully. So, yeah.